Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What strides are Texas schools making, and what else do teachers need to improve education standards in the state? As teachers recharge and prepare for a new school year beginning next month, my guest today is preparing for a new and very challenging assignment. Rita Haker is a veteran bilingual education teacher, and now she is president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association, a group that represents the interests of teachers in legislative and legal matters and provides materials and other resources to classroom teachers statewide. We've invited her to talk about how Texas education is progressing, how teachers set and achieve their goals, and what they hope to see in the classrooms of the future. Rita, welcome to Think.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you. Are the challenges faced by Texas schools and Texas teachers different somehow than what other states are dealing with?
I would say so. One of the issues that we face in Texas is the challenge of diversity in our student population. We have many students coming from other countries to Texas, and so teachers have to be prepared to address their needs, whether it's a language issue or an economic issue. And so we need support for that, and we are there to educate all our students and make sure they're successful. And so that will require more resources and money for them to do that.
One of the issues that people talk about with schools in lower income areas is the fact that a lot of students move, perhaps their parents move from one apartment to another or one home to another, and therefore students are constantly being shifted from one elementary school setting to another. Can you talk about how that affects their ability to sort of keep up with what's being taught?
Well, that is a very big challenge for the student. It is correct that we have many students that do move from one community to another. That's usually based on the needs of their parents to either find employment or, you know, they're trying to improve their economic status for their families. And so it's a difficult issue for teachers to keep up with students that are constantly moving from school to school. And with the accountability system that we have in Texas currently, there really is no room of flexibility for that student, and they're at a disadvantage to perform well.
Yeah, I know that one of the primary arguments for standardizing curricula from one campus to the next, even one district to the next in some cases, is that if a student were to move, they would sort of find themselves in the same place. But I guess it doesn't quite happen that simply.
No, it doesn't, because every student is different, and all their needs are different. And so to have a standardized curriculum, as people have discussed, would mean that we would have to have a cookie-cutter approach to our educational system. And that is probably never going to really happen because, like I said, we have influx of students every day into our schools. And so, therefore, the teacher is constantly modifying her teaching and her lesson plans to adjust for the differences in her students.
And you use the pronoun her, and I know that may have just been a choice for this one example, but there are far more women teaching in Texas public schools than men. Is that a problem, do you think?
I don't know if it's a problem. I think that it's been a challenge for many years that we haven't been able to attract enough male teachers to our profession. Teaching has been primarily dominated by females. But, you know, we are looking for those male teachers to be role models, especially for our male students, which we have a large number of our male students that do not finish high school, especially in our minority communities. So we're in need of that, and we need to really look at how we can recruit more of them to our profession.
There are some people who have been very concerned over the past few years about making sure that girls had what they needed in the classroom. Now it seems as if achievement for girls continues to improve and boys are not improving. Is that a function, do you think, of the way classrooms are set up, or how would you explain that?
Well, I think what we have to understand is that all our students come from different homes and different environments and different families. And so for our male students, they sometimes are challenged by the fact that they might not have the community support they need. And so many of our schools have addressed those needs. They've created campuses for all girls or all young men so that they're able to give them more attention and to focus on Their leadership skills are helping them build their self-esteem so that they're successful in campuses and at schools. So I do believe we're trying some innovative things across our state. I don't know if all school districts are doing that, but I have seen more programs that address the need of keeping our young people, especially our young male students, in school.
Rita Haker is my guest. She's president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. Why is it, Rita, that we lose so many new teachers just a year or two into the job?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the reasons why we lose our new teachers is that they're in need of much support, whether it is to develop their professional skills. Many of our new teachers are in need of mentors, and it has been an issue that I have advocated for many years, is to have full-time mentors for our brand new teachers. Teaching in a classroom is very complex, and not only are you supposed to be organized and know your curriculum, but manage your classroom and manage those relationships with your parents and community and the people that you work with at your school. So I believe that that needs to be an area of focus, is to have that mentoring support there for them. The other issue is long-term, our salaries are not where they need to be. Our Texas teachers are still ranked 38th in our country, and they simply cannot afford to live on the salary that they're earning in their school districts. And so many of them are attracted to other professions that pay much more than teaching.
So in other words, they give it a try and then decide they could make more doing something else.
Right. And then the other issue also is they need to see their future in the profession. And unfortunately, with the pay scales that we have in our state today, many of our veteran teachers are not recognized for their experience and their dedication. And so they look to the future and they see that they're really not moving very far in the next 20 years as far as their salaries are concerned. Mm-hmm. And so they would like to have a profession that recognizes experience and commitment, and they just don't see that in teaching today.
Setting aside the mentoring issue, how much does it matter whether a teacher gets along with other teachers in the school where he or she works?
Well, I think collaboration is a big part of teaching. Teaching is a profession where we must share ideas and learn from each other. And so I do think that diversity of opinion is important in the profession in order for us to be challenged in how we think about how our students are going to learn. But I do believe that collaboration is a key to that. So I think it is important that we learn to work with each other and respect each other's points of view, and then also develop ideas that will help all the children in your school that you're teaching.
Do you think, Rita, that Texas teachers get an appropriate amount of continuing education and sort of developmental training? Is it all good, or is some of it sort of a waste of time and some of it's really helpful?
That is dependent on district to district. I know that we have required in our state for our teachers that are being certified now that they obtain 150 hours of professional development to maintain their certificate in 5 years. I think that's important. I think we need to continue to grow as a professional and seek those professional opportunities. Professional development does need to be tailored to the needs that the teacher sees in the classroom. And I think that many times teachers don't feel that their needs are being tailored to when different things are put upon them to go to attend a workshop and so forth. But I believe with their input and their ability to talk to their local school districts and say, these are the areas that we need help with, that they're able to make impact in what kind of professional development they have.
What makes a really good school administrator, like a principal?
Well, I think that an administrator should first be an educator. I think they must understand how a teacher should and needs to grow professionally. I would hope that all our administrators were great teachers, and that they also understand the importance of engaging with their parents and their community and working with other groups outside in the community to support their campuses. I believe that that's really important for them to have that understanding and that experience, And they're able to support their teachers in their classroom much better if they have that knowledge.
Rita Haker is my guest. She's president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. And let's speak to Tim in Dallas. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Chris. Great conversation as always.
Thank
you. Know, I was kind of listening. Just got on the program maybe about 5 minutes ago, and so I just got in on the part where you're talking about the salaries and so forth. And my wife is a teacher. She's on the college level. But, you know, it's obvious that someone who goes into the teaching profession, they're not doing it for the money. It takes a special person to be a teacher and to also be a teacher that is able to kind of navigate through the bureaucracy that exists in our educational system now. So I just kind of wanted to make the point that, you know, it's no surprise to me that, you know, we continue to fall further and further behind in terms of math and science with regard to the rest of the world. And I think it's because of the obvious lack of value that we place in education and our children, which really is the only true investment that we can make in our culture that can pretty much guarantee us positive results. And I just wanted to say that, you know, it's sad. It's sad to hear this. And I wonder if the guest has any ideas or you know, any good news that she can give us in terms of how things may turn around or could turn around. And I guess that's all I have to say.
Tim, thanks so much for your call.
Sure.
What do you think, Rita?
Well, I do agree with him that it is a sad state of affairs that we are not funding our schools and supporting our teachers the way we should, because I do believe that education is the way that we can absolutely affect the lives of our students and also the state of our country, because the better educated student we have, the better economic status we will have as a country and better prepared citizens we have for the future. So I believe we need to invest in that. I also believe that we need to keep the best and brightest teachers in the classroom. And this week at our national convention that we're having here in Washington, D.C., we have discussed how we can continue to attract, you know, wonderful people to our profession that do have key expertise that we need in math and science, because we have lagged behind in retaining those qualified people in our classroom. And in order for our children to be able to compete not only in the global market but in our market here in the United States, they need to be well-versed in all areas, and especially in science and math, if we're going to continue to grow in that area. So I definitely agree with his comments that he has made.
Well, in defense of schools and teachers, you know, that's the first place where we like to point the finger when we look at students not doing as well in math and science as they are in other countries.
Right.
I wonder, though, if you think there's any culpability on the part of our culture, which is, in some cases, teaching kids that everything should be fun. And at some point, you know, doing well in math and science requires a certain amount of buckling down, even if you have an interest in the subject and an aptitude for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have seen in my experience when I've, you know, entered many classrooms, I've had the privilege of entering many classrooms of many teachers, that many of our math and science teachers really engage their students, and they think out of the box when they teach them. They're creative, and their techniques enable to get the kids interested and motivated to learn very difficult concepts. So I think when we mesh the actual art of teaching, which I might say is kind of a skill, and then with the subject matter that they're teaching, that we're able to accomplish a lot in those two areas. It's unfortunate, though, that the subject matter is a very important area that we have to attract very qualified individuals and then help them grow in their teaching ability so that they can, you know, embark on that with their students. So it's a challenge for us, and I don't think it will go away in the near future, but we are having conversations about that here at the NEA.
Rita Haker is president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. We're talking about the state of public schools in Texas. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
Listening to Think on KERA 90.1, I'm Chris Boyd. Rita Haker is here. She is president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. We're talking today about the state of public education in Texas. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. I want you to put on your teacher hat for a second, Rita, and talk about most of the teachers I've ever spoken to will tell you that after several years of experience, they recognize that one year you have what's considered sort of a great class, and the next year you might have one that really sort of challenges you and puts you on your last nerve far more often than the class before. How can we help teachers sort of get through those tougher years and come out of it still really inspired to do what they do best?
Well, we never can choose the students that we educate in our classes every day. That's the beauty of being a public school system, is that, you know, we teach who we teach. I think the best way for us to prepare for those challenges in our classroom with our students is to know where we can seek support. And those support systems are very key to the campus, you know, having a good counseling section for teachers that have students that need counseling or support services out in their homes. If it's a professional challenge, you know, as I mentioned earlier, having mentoring or people that are expertise in an area, if it's a special need student or an English language learner student or a student that might have a learning disability. Our students come to us with very different challenges, and we have to be able to know where to go to seek that support. And I think sometimes as a teacher you get very frustrated because you're in need of that assistance right away. And so patience is very key to that. But to know and be prepared for those challenges before they get to your door, I think would actually very much help our teachers today.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Braden in Grapevine. Hi, Braden.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
My question is about, I just finished my first year studying to become a choir director here. And my question for Rita is that I know that with the heavy emphasis on math and science that we're placing these days, especially with all of the standardized testing that we're doing, I know that a lot of fine arts programs, you know, choir, band, dance, theater, things like that, are sort of falling by the wayside and not really getting the focus that I think that they should get for the students who are interested in exploring those kinds of things. And I was wondering what kind of steps are being taken maybe to remedy that or to address that situation.
Thanks for your call.
Well, first I want to agree that is something that many of our school districts have encountered, having to come back because of the issue of funding, that it seems like the first place that school districts want to cut is our fine arts programs, whether they're PE classes or music classes or art classes. The appearance is that those classes are not essential to students achieving well on a test, and that should be the most important thing that we do. In my district where I came from in Austin, our belief is that our fine arts programs are as essential as mathematics or science or social studies or English or reading or whatever we say the core subjects should be. Our children come with multiple intelligences, and we have seen many studies that prove that children that do well, for instance, in music, also do well in mathematics. And they seem to also excel as students and take on those responsibilities academically as well as in the fine arts. So we see it as a true investment, and the key to that is educating our public and educating our school boards that fine arts programs really do make a difference in our students' achievement, and we must continue to fund them and support those teachers and keep those positions there for our kids. And I believe that we have a long way to go with that, especially with the funding issue that we have in our state today, but we must really be firm on keeping those programs intact.
What about recess? Is that a luxury or a necessity?
I believe that's also a necessity. That falls under extracurricular activities, as some people would say, but our children need a way to energize themselves, their bodies. It helps them think better. especially with our young children, there is a need for them to have that energy level re-energized so they can go back to the classroom and be ready to learn. We need to continue to support our kids having recess, having time to play and explore, and to just think about what they're doing in the classroom every day. It's really a reflective time for many of our children during recess time.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Nicole in Dallas. Hi, Nicole.
Hi there. I do not have any children, so I don't have any kids in any school system. But I decided about 7 years ago, that I could still support the teachers in my local school by walking over there and saying, "What can I do for you?" And I've been tutoring third graders for 7 years, working with the teachers with the math and reading for those kids. And the kids love it. The teachers appreciate it. And I also do private tutoring. I wanted to just say two things. First of all, to encourage people to participate with their neighborhood school, even if they don't have kids or if they don't have kids in that school. If your schedule is flexible, maybe you can spare an hour or two a week. Everybody really appreciates it. And the other thing is, for parents who may be interacting with their teachers and volunteer or private tutors, if there's things that your kid needs to work on, like multiplication facts, that doesn't stop when the child leaves school or has private tutoring for an hour a week. It needs to be every day, and the parents need to help. The teachers need the support of the parents to continue the learning at home.
Do you see a breakdown there, Nicole?
Well, you know, I have tutored some children where I feel that the parents are not supporting the teachers, that they're sort of, they feel like they're hiring me for an hour or two a week, and that's going to be all it takes. And, yeah, we can get over the hump and help those kids pass, you know, their classes with some private tutoring, but it can't just stop at the schoolhouse door. And I'm sure that, you know, any teacher would agree that, you know, you need to have parents assisting, especially the younger kids, with homework that might challenge them.
Thank you so much for your call. Rita, I know that volunteers do play a really big role in a lot of schools these days.
Yes, they sure do, and I do appreciate the caller volunteering her time as a community member to her campus, because that has been something that we've always advocated for. We need our community members to be our partners in helping to educate our kids, and so giving so willingly of your time is just a great, great gift. Parents today have a lot of challenges, obviously, and many of them can support their students learning at home, and many of them can't. In our state, currently we have approximately 700,000 English proficient students that need help with their language skills. We call them English language learners, and many of those parents also need support in helping their students. And so it's very, very key for us to come together as communities to see how parents can be helped by other parents and also be supported by the schools and the campuses where their children go. And this is a challenge for us in Texas with the diversity that we have in our student population.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to McKinney and speak with Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen Kimball here in McKinney. And I have a quick question. I was hoping to engage your guests in a conversation in order to bring up the topic of the certification process in the state of Texas. And I want to go ahead and admit my bias that I don't have any experience teaching in public education. I've been almost 20 years purely in private schools. And there's a phrase that I've heard before where teachers either kind of get it or you don't get it in terms of how to teach. And I was wondering if that, if your guest feels that teaching as a vocation and as a calling is something that can actually be learned and be taught, and if the certification process might possibly place value on things that are actually not completely relevant in the classroom, and does that keep people away? You know, a really qualified college professor can't, with an outstanding college-level career, can't teach in the public classroom without going through the certification hoops. And I was wondering if there's any research out there that shows or anything that demonstrates that that possibly keeps people, highly qualified people, away from the teaching profession.
Interesting question. Thanks a lot, Karen. What do you think,
Thank you, Rita?
Well, I think teaching is a lifelong learning process. So I do think that much of what you do as a teacher can be learned. It can also be a calling, but it is a complex profession. So that means you have to constantly be learning new subject matter, new techniques to address your students' needs. So I think that is something that's important. The certification process in our state is pretty standardized based on the subject area that you teach in our classrooms today. Our teachers are required to pass tests, and there is different avenues for different grade levels as to what tests you have to take. Unfortunately, many times our state mandates things that we don't get a lot of input into, but we do make sure that we do address those issues with our elected leaders and also leaders that serve on the board of our state to look at certification for our teachers. We do need to work on attracting people and keeping people to our profession that have other experiences outside of a traditional program. And so if there is somebody who would like to be a teacher in Texas that's a professor or has an expertise but's not certified, we need to see what we can do to help them become a certified teacher and come to our schools if that's what they desire to do.
Understanding completely what you meant when you were speaking earlier about the need for mentoring and professional development, is it too easy for teachers who are unmotivated and perhaps not in the right profession to stay in their jobs indefinitely?
I don't think it's too easy. I think that our teachers today are constantly aware of the challenges that they're being faced in their classroom, and that's why many of them leave. Our retention rate is not very good, as you mentioned earlier, among our young teachers, and that is because they realize the standards, the high-stake testing standards that we live in today in our classrooms, and many of them truly don't want to work in that kind of environment. And so I believe that, you know, our teachers are not necessarily unmotivated, but in many cases their morale is not where it needs to be because the lack of support and understanding is not there for them.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Tuesday in Dallas. Hi, Tuesday. Tuesday, I'm so sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to call back because we cannot hear you. We will take a call instead from Milt in Plano. Hi, Milt.
Yes, I'm pretty experienced in really teaching at all levels in the high-risk schools and the other schools. And basically it ties into your statement really almost of why do 50% of the teachers leave the function within 5 years? And it's very simple to me. It's who has influence in the school system. At level one now, you have the parents, the students, the attorneys, and the politicians. That's level one. Level two is the administration, and at the lowest level is the teacher. And unless you change that around, we're not going to improve. And then finally, you know, we talk about how important education is. I listen to all these debates. We talk about the pins in the lapel. We talk about the ridiculous things. They don't talk about education. So I am really concerned, and unless that paradigm changes, it's not good.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. A lot of frustration we're hearing there, Rita. And do you think that, in fact, education is a political issue in this presidential race?
Yes, it is, and it needs to be discussed. Right now we have a law that we call the No Child Left Behind law, which we believe needs to be fixed. It has caused in our state punitive measures to be put in place for our schools and for our teachers and for different students that we consider high risk, that if they do not perform well in their school, they definitely get on this train where eventually their campuses could be shut down and they are being punished for the performance of their students. The way that I believe that we can influence that as teachers is we need to be the experts on what it takes to teach our kids. And also we need to form partnerships with our administrators and our parents. We as a political organization have that influence, can have that power, and also make sure that the people that are elected to office do address the issues that we're dealing with in this national law that we have today.
Have you seen any benefit whatsoever from No Child Left Behind?
No Child Left Behind does address many areas. It addresses the issue of special education. It has always addressed the issue of Title I services for our students. There are many things that it has in place that can be worked upon and be improved. The piece that we feel that has not been addressed is the accountability issue and also the funding issue, because every year it seems like we're getting less and less support for our schools and for our programs that we have, and therefore it puts more pressure on our state and our local school districts to take up the difference of resources and money that we're not getting from the national level. So we are committed to working on that with our elected leaders, not only at the state level, but at the national level, to work on improving that for our students.
Is there a way to generalize what teachers, if they were given more money, not for their salaries, but that had to be spent somehow in the classroom or on instruction, where that money would go?
Well, it really depends on your students. I know that many of our teachers spend a lot of their own money on classroom materials and resources for their students. And so I would guess that maybe some of that money would go there. Many of them like to engage their students in different kinds of projects and going on field trips and going to different places that expands the thinking of their kids. And so many of them might use the money for that. It really does depend on your classroom. Your classroom is a very different kind of environment where those children really guide where you're going in your instruction based on their needs.
Rita Haker is my guest. She's president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. We'll return to our discussion with her in just a minute. We have a full board of calls, but you can also join us via email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association, Rita Haker. Our number is 1-800-933-5372, and that is where we find Allison calling from Denton. Hi, Allison.
Hi. I'm a teacher here in Denton, been teaching for 2 years, and one of the most frustrating things I've come across is students who fail one or more classes for the year, but because they pass the tax test, they get promoted. And I wanted to ask your guest if she thought that these lower expectations, the bare minimum, is teaching our students a culture of just do enough to get by, or if that social promotion, moving them ahead, is the best decision for the students.
What do you think, Rita?
Well, social promotion has been a long-term issue that we've had a lot of frustration over for many years, not only at the secondary level, but also at the elementary level. It's unfortunate, though, that our tax test in Texas has become the biggest decision maker to view how well our students are being educated in our schools today. I definitely do believe that our children should be more than a test score, and that our teachers should be allowed to make the professional decision whether their students should go on or not. Again, that is a decision made in collaboration with parents and administrators. to make the best decision possible for every student. So there is no blanket answer to social promotion. It is something that is a big decision in the life of a student. Many students have been socially promoted and done great afterwards. Some students don't do well at all. And so it is something that is going to take a lot of time for people to sit down and discuss as a team, that being the parent, the teacher, and the administrator at that campus. So there is no real right answer for social promotion.
An email from Stan says, there was a recent article in the New York Times about the Texas Textbook Committee requiring addressing intelligent design as an equal to evolution. What is your group's position on this issue?
Textbook committees should be open to all our teachers to give their point of view. I don't have a position on that particular issue, but I know that many of our teachers have been concerned for many, many years that the textbooks do not have a lot of input from a variety of points of view. And it is a costly item for us as a state. We spend millions of dollars on textbooks every day. Some schools feel that the selections are fine for their students. Some schools don't. But, you know, again, it's about input from everyone. But in that particular area, I do not have a position on that.
Is it time to rethink the purchase of hard copies of textbooks when we have so much technology that might allow us to put an entire year's worth of textbooks onto a very small electronic device?
We probably should have a discussion about that. The issue of technology, we have advanced much in our public schools today in our state. Many of our students have laptops available to them, and many of them don't. Many of our children, though, do take their books home to study at night and to make sure they prepare well for the next day. And in many homes, technology is not available yet. And so I think that we need to be kind of cautious to go all one way or the other way. And so we probably need a mix of both. But I do think that we have advanced much in technology in our schools and that maybe we should start a phase in possibly of that.
Rita Haker is my guest. She's president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. Let's speak next to Brad in Dallas. Hi, Brad.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I have a question. Here in Frisco, where I'm at, they emphasize, well, they don't really emphasize, but they seem to spend quite a bit of money on group sports, football, basketball, baseball, so forth and so on. But when you see some schools get in trouble and talk about the budget cuts and teachers not getting their raises like they should, why isn't it that the first thing that goes? Since we're talking about education, education is first. I mean, the schools here and middle schools here in Frisco, they spent millions of dollars just on one school having a football field.
What do you think about that, Rita?
Well, I think a lot of that is driven by the community in which you live. And, of course, the parents play a big role in that. And if it is something that the community feels that it is something they need to invest a lot of money into, I think that's going to happen. At the same time, I think it's very important for us as educators to show that we need resources also to be put in our classrooms, that our students need to have a well-rounded education. Although physical education is part of that, we need to ensure that our teachers and our students get the materials and resources they need in the classroom. So that might be a discussion that needs to happen there locally. And maybe a collaboration should occur between parents, community, and teachers to address that issue.
I don't know the exact percentage, but given the large number of students in Texas who already spend time in before school or after school care programs because their parents are working, would it make sense to look at a longer length school day?
For small children, it depends. We have several preschool and three-year-old programs in our state of Texas now, and most of our preschoolers can't last for many hours without some kind of break, and many of them have half a day, and then they come back later in the day. But for kids, I'm assuming you're talking about, like, after school, like extended care or something like
that. Elementary schoolers, yeah.
Yes. We have several programs like that, and what I think is very important is that the kids are engaged after school. that they have an activity that's going to be helpful to them the next day in the classroom, and that there is a relationship between the after-school care group or facility and the school district and the school that the student comes from. And you're right, many of our parents are very busy and they can't pick up their students very early after school, but I think they would feel much better if they knew that that collaboration existed between the school and the after-school provider.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line is Sharon in Keene. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I was interested in these programs where they intensify their nutrition program, making sure that all their students have breakfast, lunch, and also take a backpack of food home with them for the weekend. I wondered how much the nutrition, of course, helps with their brains, but how much is just the fact that people care, that they're hungry, have to do with their better performance, and do the parents actually support the school better with these kind of a program?
Are you familiar with the programs that she's talking about, Rita?
No, but I do believe that many of our teachers believe that children need to have either a snack during the day, like an energy booster to help them throughout the day, because lunch and breakfast can be hours apart, and we need to keep them energized and ready to learn. So there are many times that we plan those times, those snack times, and also that we teach our children what's good for their bodies. Health education is part of the curriculum that we have, and teaching them those foods that are good for their body, that are good for them to help their brains, and that's also a parental education piece that I think we have tried to work on, is teaching our parents what are those foods that are good for your students, and what is it that you need to pack in their lunchbox and take it to school every day if possible. And I think we've been pretty successful with that in many of our schools.
An email from Steve says, my wife is a teacher, and I hear about the loathing of the tax test, the teachers teaching the test. He says, my issue is why? Why don't the teachers teach in a manner they know will educate the kids and let the results simply be shown on the test results? Don't teach the test. What do you have to say to that?
Well, he's correct. Many of our teachers do feel that they're teaching to the test. And the reason why that is occurring is, again, the system, the accountability system that we live in Texas is one where if our students do not perform well on a standardized test, that school districts could be punished and schools could be labeled as low performing. And so the tests have high stakes attached to them. It is occupying much more time than we should be in preparing kids to take a test, other than going through curriculum and exploring ways of students to learn and expand on their learning. And so many times our teachers feel their hands are tied. The way that we are going to have to overcome those challenges is to educate public members, public citizens, that our students are more than just test takers. They deserve a fully rounded education. That is the only way they will be fully prepared to be good citizens in the future. So it has been a challenge for us as a state to deal with this testing issue.
Let's speak next to Olivier in Plano. Hi, Olivier.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I did want to make a comment on a comment that another caller made regarding certification.
Mm-hmm.
As a teacher in a private school for the past 2 years, I just started my certification this summer, and I do feel that it has been pretty beneficial, not only in terms of providing teachers that are unfamiliar with the tax with some information about it, but also in terms of just professional development, it's been very helpful. And with the advent of alternative certification programs, it's not really too big of a hoop to jump through. And that's just my comment.
Thanks very much for your call. Do you agree with that, Rita?
Yeah, I agree that there are many certification programs out in our state that have been very successful in preparing teachers to enter the classroom. Of course, we have our traditional ways of certifying teachers, which is through a university program, going through the university to become a teacher. But we have had numerous alternative certification programs that have entered our state that have certified teachers that did not go through a traditional program. It's been good to work with those groups to give them input, to show them that, you know, teachers perform better on their certification tests because they do have additional support. And many of them do offer mentoring as part of their certification program, and that's made a big difference in our teachers being prepared.
So you talked earlier about the importance of programs and systems set in place that keep the very best and brightest of teachers in the classroom teaching as opposed to in different kinds of positions. And I'm wondering, you're now in a position that takes you out of the classroom, and I'm wondering if you feel that the tension of that sort of pull, that your skills could also be doing a lot of good in a classroom.
Well, I always intended from the time I graduated from high school that my profession would be a teacher. I believe it's a very important profession to have, and I've had the opportunity to visit many of the school districts across our state and have been very excited by the things I see with the teachers in their classrooms with their students. And it's a very empowering thing to educate a student and to see them grow. And I believe that in my new position, I'll be able to support my fellow teachers in Texas so that they can continue to do a good job for all our students. And I'm very excited about that.
So you can deal with missing the classroom a little bit.
Yes, but I intend to be out there, mm-hmm. and I intend to make sure that I feel and see what they're going through and also think about the future of education in Texas and how we can help our kids perform. And not just perform on a test, but to perform as educated citizens for our state.
Can you tell us about the best teacher you ever had?
Sure. I think my most influential teacher I had was a high school teacher I had, and he was a choir director, so I think it was very interesting to have a choir director on today. He was very influential because he was very encouraging to me, and he actually helped me in my leadership development as a student. And I recall having many conversations with him about teaching and teachers. And he was a great role model. He exhibited the kinds of things that I know our students need to have, the dedication, the loyalty to his profession, his willingness to give unconditionally. Those are all the characteristics I see in teachers today in our classrooms. And I wanted to be like him, and he was very inspiring. And there have been times that I have called upon him as a teacher for advice and guidance, and he will always have that special place for me as a teacher in my heart.
So he's sort of a lifelong mentor for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. And the last thing I want to ask you in about the 10 seconds we have left is the best way for community members to support schools?
I think just to come to your schools. Many of our schools, starting in August, will have to back to school at night. They have carnivals. They have get-to-know-your-parent nights. Be a part of your school. Get to know the teachers in your community. Get to know the principal of the school. There's so many ways that you can reach out, and it's a very fulfilling thing to help a child be successful at school. So that's what I would ask of our community.
Rita Haker is president-elect of the Texas State Teachers Association. Rita, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.